Hello, and thank you for joining us today on the Gentle Art of Crushing It show, where we focus on learning and sharing with our listeners all there is to know about how to create success in our lives. This show stands on the shoulders of giants. Our mission is to empower and inspire our listeners to create the life of their dreams whilst having a blast in the process. Let's celebrate life together. Welcome to the show.
Welcome back to the Gentle Art of Crushing It podcast. My name is Randy Smith, and I will be your host today. And really excited to have both Josh and Colin with us today. Josh and Colin are the co-founders of All Day Investments. They're also podcast hosts of Investing RN. And ultimately, they teach nurses and healthcare professionals how to build a life of abundance through focusing on mobile home communities. So Josh and Colin, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks for having us.
All right. Well, why don't we just jump right into it? Josh or Colin, either one of you or both, care to tell us a little bit more about yourselves and how you guys found yourselves where you are today?
All right. I'll start. Yeah. So I'm a nurse, and then I went back to school to get my graduate degree in anesthesia. So I currently work in the hospital administering anesthesia. I guess my journey from just working a W-2 and spending all my money started back in 2019, when I was kind of, my cousin invested in some properties, and it's like the first time I was exposed to actually, you know, building some wealth or, you know, rental properties in general. And talking with Colin every once in a while, we were like, hey, we should just jump in and do something together. And so we eventually put our money together, bought something, did a burr, and then, you know, that's how it all started. And now we own a portfolio of, is it 10 properties, several mobile home parks. And that's kind of the really quick, you know, summary of how we started investing.
Yeah, very cool. And then Colin, were you in the healthcare space as well, or what was your journey like?
Yeah, so I did ER nursing for a lot of years. I'm currently out of it, just running property management, but on my way back into it. Okay. And Josh and I know each other. I married his sister, so that's the connection there. Okay. We're all in healthcare. And yeah, it was, Josh says it was his, cousin that got him into it, but it was actually his parents. So my in-laws that got me the idea of, investing in real estate. Okay. So we're looking in, I guess kind of rural small town, Wisconsin. And, that's where we found our first deal. And yeah, we'd been heavy on the Bigger Pockets podcast. So we were like all fired up on the Burr method. You know, buy, rent, buy, rehab, rent, refinance, repeat. So we, that's how we got started. But it was just a little bit of back and forth, one deal falling through, and then we finally got our first one back in, May of 2020.
Are you interested in real estate investing but don't know where to get started or think you don't have the time or money? Are you stuck in your W-2 because the golden handcuffs make it hard to walk away? If this sounds like you, check out impactequity.net and schedule some time to talk with the founder, Randy Smith. Randy went from massive income to leaving his W-2 through passive income, and he can help you do the same. www.impactequity.net.
Now I remember, you guys are you guys both in northern Wisconsin, or where are you guys located?
So I live in Green Bay. Colin is currently in LA, but somewhere else in California.
I was going to say, yeah, you know, it's funny. So I went to school in the UP. I'm a Uper in northern Michigan, and I actually surfed on the Great Lakes. So it is possible to surf in the Midwest, believe it or not. But
I've been trying to tell
nice
Colin that.
Fellow cheesehead there. Yeah.
Yeah, they keep trying to tell me that, but it's just, I don't know. Surfing, like wind swell, is not as fun on the lakes as it is here in the ocean, but. There is some there. I've heard.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah.
Well, very cool. So you guys found, as nurses, you guys have kind of unique schedules, which lends itself to being available to do some stuff on the side as well. So you guys started with the Burr strategy, which I know a lot of our listeners know about because I talk quite a bit about. But can you talk a little bit about what that first asset or that first acquisition looked like? Was it, you know, just easy peasy and no issues at all, or were there some challenges along the way?
I mean, I guess I mean, looking back, it was pretty easy peasy, but maybe that's just because we're comparing it to our second deal, which was not easy peasy.
Okay. Yeah.
So our first one was a single family home in rural Wisconsin, which I'm sure it would be tough to find one like this nowadays, but you know, they're out there. So like, just if you look hard enough, they're still there. So we bought this for $35,000, and we bought it cash, put $20,000 into it, and then it appraised at $80,000. So we got a loan, 75% loan to value, and got all of our money back. And that was it was the light bulb moment. We're like, this is real. Cause I had listened to like probably 1,000 hours of podcasts, Bigger Pockets being probably the majority of that. But it was at this point where I'm like, this is real. They're not full of it. Like, it was a light bulb moment. And I was like, I need to do this again a million times.
Yeah. Yeah. So you paid 35, put 25 into it. So you're all in 60. And then you ended up pulling out, did you pull out more than you had into it, or just right on exactly what you had into it essentially?
Yep. So we bought it for 35,000, put about 20,000 into it. So we were all at 55,000. We got $60,000 back. So we got a check for $5,000, and then we still had the asset. Wow. Granted, we had to put about $1,000 in, or a couple thousand dollars of CapEx in the next year, but still like more money than we had into the deal.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that. If you could do that, mix and repeat over and over and over again, that would be fantastic. Now, was it cash flowing at all when you finally got tenants in it and things stabilized, or what did that
look like? So this was back in the days of interest rates at 3%.
Yeah.
We refinanced end of 2020. So we had a really good, you know, loan on it. I think our total like PITI all in was around $400 a month, and we were renting it at $700? When we first rented it,
we started at 700, and today it's up to 825, and I think now we have we're like running it through escrow, so I think it's like four something a month, but we're cash flowing about $400 a month on that property.
Fantastic.
So it's not bad.
Not bad at all. Yeah, and if I'm curious, was it a lengthy process, or how long did it take you guys to buy it and go through the acquisition process and do all of the renovations to get it rented out?
Yeah, so that was the acquisition. It was actually listed for $32,000, and we'd been looking for a while, and we had another deal fall through like the previous summer. And this realtor we were working with brought this one up, and it sounded like it was going to go for over asking. So we actually offered $35,000 when it was only listed at $32,000, and we got it. And, you know, like some people would be like, oh, well, why would you pay more? But it worked out. You know, we kind of, maybe foolishly, we're confident in our numbers, but we had a good idea. There were some challenges in terms of like supplies because the remodel we were doing was during COVID. So we did a roof, siding, a new front porch. The interior was actually in pretty good shape. And that took about 6 months, and we were anticipating maybe 2 months, but at the time we thought it was just supply issues, but later on found out might have been more to do with the contractor we're using, because fast forward, our next flip took 2 years with the same contractor. Okay. And there were no supply issues at that time, so yeah, it was a little difficult and a little more time intensive in that sense, but you know, we're both in good positions, and my wife as well. Her and I were doing travel nursing, making good money. Josh makes pretty decent money, so it wasn't like we were like struggling with that capital, like mobilized. We're doing okay. Sure.
And we're talking $60,000 all in. We're not talking $400,000 all in. So not a bad strategy for your first one to go all in with really just the capital out of your pocket. You don't have the risks that are associated with hard money if you're going down that path. And now I know when I was doing BRRRRs, there was like a vesting or a vetting period where you had to own the asset for a certain amount of months before you could refinance it. Did you guys run into challenges with that at all, or?
It worked out because it took right at 6 months for the rehab, and that was what the vetting period was. And I'm not positive on this, but I think it kind of just depends on which type of a loan you're using. That first loan that we ever got, that was in both of our personal names. And at the time, it was a 6 month vetting on the type of loan that we were using before we could refinance.
Got it. Okay. So Josh, you're basically feet on the street at that point, or was it close to you? And then Colin, mm-hmm. you're, you're traveling nursing, whether you're in California or somewhere else. How did you guys split up the duties and responsibilities or all of the work that was going on for this asset?
Yeah, so
I think it was just excitement. Like, there wasn't a whole lot of decision making before that. We were both just like kind of gung-ho, ready to get our feet in the door and start doing this thing that apparently you can't do wrong. That's what right. I thought, at least.
Right.
So I mean, we split the all-in cost, like the cash out of pocket, we were splitting evenly. I would just go out there every chance I got and be doing stuff that now I would never go do because it doesn't make sense. It'd make more sense for me to go, you know, work an extra shift and pay for it rather than me going out there trying to rip up some bushes that took like 8 hours to rip up three bushes.
sure.
But yeah, we were just gung-ho, ready to get going. Had like a fire lit under us because I had seen, I know Colin said my parents were the people that he looked to as real estate investors. I looked to my cousin. I was seeing what they were able to build in such a short amount of time, and I just wanted to be a part of it.
Awesome. So this one went so smooth. You guys decided you were going to duplicate and rinse and repeat, and it sounds like the other one didn't quite go as smooth. So what happened there?
The other one was it had been on the market for a while, and it was a 5-bed, 2-bath for like, I think it was listed at like 29,000, but it was like, it was a full gut job, like corner unit. And we knew it was going to be a lot of work. So we had that same contractor go in and like walk through it and give us a rough estimate of what he thought it would cost. And, you know, like it seemed reasonable because it was like, he estimated it was going to be about $50,000 to remodel this thing. So we offered 23,000, bought it cash. But what we later found out after 2 years of flipping this thing was our biggest mistake was, for whatever reason, we decided to skip the inspection. We saved that $500.
Well, we knew it was going to be a full gut job. And I think that's kind of what we wrote off in our heads. Like, okay, well, we know we're redoing everything. So what's the point of an inspection?
Yeah.
We won't make that same mistake again.
Well, and so what they missed was... I guess the contractor didn't look in the attic, and in the attic, when we went to sell it, they did an inspection and there had been some fire damage in the attic, which apparently hadn't affected the structural integrity of the roof because they re-roofed the thing. So there's guys walking around up on it, but, you know, it was like this whole thing. We had to get a structural engineer out, and then there were some foundation issues that they had to check. So after we had the thing under contract, we ended up having to spend another maybe like 20 or 25 grand just fixing like plumbing, because he wasn't a licensed plumber. There was like some HVAC stuff that had to be done. We had to go and like reinforce the roof and then like some foundation stuff. So all in all, it ended up being this like 2-year flip that we basically broke even on. But thankfully, like in the meantime, we continued with our investing journey and didn't let that like slow us down. But it was, there were some frustrating moments during that 2 years.
So the lesson for the listeners is always, always, always get an inspection. I did the same thing. I bought turnkeys, and I did not get an inspection. I just relied on his inspection, and that was a big mistake for me as well. So if listeners get just one thing from this, is always, always, always get that inspection, pay the $500, because it will... Yeah. It'll pay for itself many, many times over. So very good.
Lender. And a lot of new investors, they're trying to save pennies wherever they can get it. And like that, I mean, that's, you did it. We did it. Like, I feel like everybody does it because you're not making a lot of money and you want to cut corners almost. You're just trying to save as much money as you can, but that's not one area that you should be saving your money. Save it in other areas.
And to your point earlier as well, like you said that, in the beginning, you were running out and cleaning hedges and doing stuff that you've got no business doing. You don't have the expertise. And quite frankly, if you look at the dollar per hour, what it would cost you to hire somebody, you're much better off just going to your job and doing that. So like that who, not how mentality of you focusing on what you do best and then hiring folks to focus on what they do best. I think that that message comes through many, many times. So. Okay, so you've got your second property now. It sounds like you sold that one. You did you guys hold on to the first one? It sounds like, or
we still have it. Yeah. We consider selling it all the time, but no, we still have it right now.
It's our baby.
$400 in cash flow every month and things appreciating. Why not? Right. Yeah. Okay. So while you're doing the second one, you said that you didn't pause. You guys went on and started doing other stuff. And I know you're doing big things in mobile home communities now. Did you jump into mobile homes right away, or what was kind of the next step in your guys' journey?
Yeah. So I give all the credit to my cousin on this one. So he was the one that I looked to as somebody who was in the real estate game, and I saw what he was able to do. So he had been buying mobile home parks for a while, for a few years. And he basically called me one day and said, "Hey, there's this mobile home park about, you know, it's in Wisconsin. I don't know how close it is to you, but like, take a look at it. I'm not really interested in anything in Wisconsin right now, but take a look." And so like, I looked it up. It was about an hour and a half from where I live. Before this, I had not really been interested in mobile home parks because there's like a stigma to them, I guess. Mm-hmm. But after I looked at this one, I looked at the numbers, I saw what my cousin was doing with them. I was like, let's consider it. Like this might be a good one. And I sent it to Colin. I'm pretty sure he agreed with me.
Yeah. Well, and prior to that, we had actually bought a portfolio of like three small multifamily properties.
Okay.
So then we came across this mobile home park, and I think just seeing what his cousin had, and at this point, like I was like heavily influenced by his cousin as well.
Sure.
But seeing what he was able to do with mobile home parks, and then, you know, again, bigger pockets, Brandon Turner was always talking about them.
Yeah.
We were hearing about these people doing very well with them. So yeah, when he kind of gave us this deal to look at, like I ended up calling and speaking to the owner, cause it wasn't listed, it was off market. And we were able to negotiate a 20% carry. So he carried 20%, and it appraised for over what we paid for it. And so we were able to get it with like no money out of pocket, essentially.
Wow.
But then we, in the meantime, like I said, a year before that or whatever, we had bought, or maybe it was earlier that year, we had bought a couple like small multifamily properties. And at the end of 2022, we had bought the mobile home park in July. At the end of the year, we're looking at, you know, profit and loss and all that stuff. And this mobile home park in 6 months was outperforming every other property we had. So we were just like,
wow.
Wait, okay, so maybe there is something here. And it's like, That's what kind of led us to like going all in on the mobile home parks.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that mobile home park we bought with no money out of pocket. So it was very highly leveraged. We had only owned it for 6 months. And still at the end of that year, it was the best performing asset. So it was kind of a no-brainer for us to focus on mobile home parks at that point.
So
well, I was going to say,
go ahead.
No, go ahead. You might be asking the question. So go for it.
Yeah. So I'm intrigued with the space, right? And I think it's interesting to hear stories like this and people, you hear similar stories with self-storage as well, or some other ancillary asset classes, but you get into mobile homes and it's something you had never done. Fortunately, though, you had a relative that had a lot of experience that you could bounce ideas off. But I'm curious, as you're going into that, are you leveraging the same type of due diligence process on the mobile home park as you did with your small multis and your singles? Or were there new skills that you had to learn, or the nuances of mobile home parks that you've got to learn? Or did you guys just jump in and learn as you went?
Yeah, we, so his cousin gave us the deal and like kind of helped us like walking through like the negotiation. But after that, we were kind of on our own figuring it out. And a lot of it was similar, like as we're going through it, this was septic and well. So it was like, we knew on this one, like, make sure you get the inspections on the septic and well.
Learned that lesson. Yeah.
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 Well, and I don't even think we'd gotten to the point where we were trying to sell the other one, but we were just like, at that point, we were like, yeah, we're getting the inspections. They were all park or tenant owned homes. So It was essentially just land and then like septic and well. So we did do that, but even in that space, there's been some growing pains because recently at that first park we bought, must've been like 3 months ago or so, we had the well pump go out and it was kind of like, I guess something we didn't know to check, but it was like the type of pump it was. It was like, I forget what it was, but it wasn't the variable speed pump and there weren't enough pressure tanks or something like that. So the pump was just constantly working and It just wore itself out. And so like now I would know to like in our inspection, just like, hey, is the pump working? Like, okay, what kind of pump is it? How many tanks are there? Like, is this sufficient for the park it's serving? So even though we did things right, we still kind of had to like learn the hard way, but you know, that's just kind of the way.
I think it might be a little bit unrealistic to not expect, you know, big CapEx expenses every once in a while.
Yeah,
but at the same time, so, like it always hurts a little bit.
Yeah. So what is a pump replacement cost with something like that? I'm just curious.
So that was, this is a 20 pad mobile home park and it was $8,000.
Okay.
So that was like, you know, and we went with like a nicer, better one. And but it's just, it's kind of that, you know, you don't know what you don't know, and that's okay. Like it shouldn't stop you, but like just prepare accordingly. And it, you know, it's not the end of the world. Like cut into our cash flow, but
you just,
and you know now, so the next time you won't make that same mistake. So, okay. Well, interesting. So that was a 20 pad unit. It was what, about an hour and a half from you, Josh, I think you said. Mm-hmm. So at that point, how long was it after you bought that first park that you started looking at doing more parks? Was it right away or did you wait for that thing to stabilize or what was the timing like?
I mean, I think it was the end of the year when we realized that it was still our best performing asset. It was at that point where we were like, we're calling every single park in Wisconsin. We're buying lists. We're gonna buy every single one of them. And we started like cold calling ourselves. I know Colin kind of figured out how to like manually skip trades without paying for them, because we were still at this point like trying to save pennies. Now we buy lists and we do things a lot more streamlined, but back then we were manually skip tracing each park. We'd drive by a park. I'd be on my way to work. I'd see a mobile home park. I'd like ping it and send it to Colin. Colin's like, oh, I'm going to find this. And he would like somehow find the phone number to the owner and we'd be cold calling that way. And we actually found a park that we ended up closing on that way, which is a little bit crazy, but yeah, so it worked, but now things are a lot more streamlined and we're, you know, calling a lot more parks.
Yeah. And like literally driving for dollars works in that space.
It does. It sounds like. Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Very good. So yeah, you guys, it sounds like, fortunately you guys have somewhat flexible type of roles where you have some time during the week to be working on this. This is not just all nights and weekends, I suspect. In those early years, I would say, how much time do you think you guys were spending working on your real estate activities? Was it, you know, just a couple of hours a week, or were you like completely obsessed and working 30, 40 hours a week on this stuff, or what did that look like?
There was a point where me and Colin would talk at least an hour every day, as I'm either driving to work or, you know, driving home, or we're at home on the computers trying to skip trace a couple properties manually. Yeah. So, I mean, there was quite a bit of it, but at the same time, I was still in my full-time job, especially early on. Colin was still in travel nursing, so we were still doing stuff around our jobs inside the hospital. Colin eventually like stepped away from the hospital and he was doing this a little bit more full-time, but I never left my job in the hospital. So it was a decent amount of weekends, a lot of afternoons, evenings, but now we've been able to build this thing to what I wouldn't have imagined, you know, 4 years ago when we started.
That's awesome. That's awesome. What's the portfolio look like today?
So today, I think we're at, I think earlier you said 10, Josh. It's not quite 10 properties because we've sold a bunch.
Oh, yeah.
But we've got 72 units, which is three mobile home parks, a fourplex, and then the single family home. And then we've got a duplex that we bought from the first owner, or the first mobile home park guy we bought from, that we're seller financing to the owners. And then we've got a fourth mobile home park that we're going to be closing on any day now.
We're supposed to close on Friday, but had to push it back another week. So, you know, by the time this airs, we'll have closed on it.
Awesome. Yeah. So are you guys cash flowing everything yourselves, or are you guys taking on investor capital as well?
We have one private money lender from a friend of mine from college. And it was something that we were just talking and kind of out of the blue. His money was just sitting in, you know, the bank account making less than 1% return on it. And I was like, I can give you 8%. Like, come give it to us. so he gave us a hefty chunk and we've been able to, you know, stabilize and increase the value of several of our properties with that money. And yeah, so we have one private investor. We are accepting some other investors for these newer parks that we're finding now. Currently just one private investor.
Awesome. Yeah, I wondered if we could dig into that a little bit too, because I think, you know, for our listeners, it's the newer passive investors. So it's folks that likely, you know, don't want to be as active as you guys are on these. Certainly hearing some of the nightmares and some of the challenges you have, more people that I run into are really just looking for that true passive income, mailbox money. Can you talk a little bit about what that structure looks like? Because I think a lot of folks on here probably know folks in their network just like you that they could be investing with, or potentially you guys as well. So how do you structure something like that? What do the terms look like? Are there like legal documents that are signed? Are these just simple promissory notes? Like, what does that look like if you start working with private investors?
Yeah, so this one in particular was a simple promissory note. It was just 8% compounded over 3 years, and then we return it at the end of the term. I mean, when you're working with private investors, it can be as simple or as complicated as you want. I like to keep things as simple as possible, just for my own ease and for the people that are lending the money. I know a lot of people that are just kind of giving 10% straight money, you know, monthly payments until you pay it back. That's something that we've talked about doing, just to keep it simple, and you're getting a better return than you will in the stock market most years.
I love it. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And I think, you know, it's interesting. I had an investor ask me this question, I don't know, earlier this week or last week, but they said, why would somebody want to pay 8%? Like, what's the benefit to you paying 8% versus finding capital in some other places? I'm curious if you could share that, because it would be a good education process for the listeners, I think.
Yeah, well, so simplicity is kind of a big part of it. It's simple for the private money lender, but it's also a lot more simple for us. We don't have to go through like all these vigorous underwriting processes that take, you know, up to several months. Dealing with the bank on our last property that we bought, it took us over 120 days to close because of all of the legal implications and all these things that we were going through. We ended up closing on it, but it could be simpler, but at the same time, it's us helping these other people. For example, the first private money lender that we had, his money was sitting idle in the bank, and that's not helping anyone. It's not helping you that has all the money sitting in the bank. So at a certain point, like, we want to help other people grow their money as well and grow their wealth, where you can make 10x the returns that you're making if it's just sitting in an idle savings account somewhere.
Yeah. Thank you for going into that too. I think it's important for folks. Like, yes, it's really easy for folks like you and I to say that, you know, we can give you double of what you can find in a high yield savings account. But for us, we need access to capital, because at some point, if we're growing our portfolios, we're probably putting every dollar we have into it anyways. And we want to continue to grow, because the benefits of scaling programs like this are significant for operators. And if you're constrained by capital or having to play within the banker's box of exactly what they need in order to do loans with you guys, just simply finding those folks that are in your network that know you and they already know, like, and trust you, it's just a mutually beneficial transaction for everybody involved. And generally what I'm finding is that investors, once they start to put a little bit of capital, even with just a newer operator, somebody that's just really starting to grow, they can build the confidence in the space that will lead to diversification in their portfolio in the long run, which benefits them significantly. So yeah, thank you for kind of walking through that. I think you run into a lot of people that everybody seems like they know somebody, and there could be an opportunity for those, but there's a lot of people that have fears, because there's some bad actors out there too. So does that ever come up with your investors, or is it something you ever have to talk about, or how do you guys address that?
Oh yeah. Every time. Yeah. Everybody wants to know what the risk is to them, and what we're doing to minimize that risk is, I think we mentioned start of the podcast. So I'm a CRNA. I make a pretty decent W-2 income. You can Google what most people make, and I make a little bit more than that. No, I'm just kidding. But we're putting personal guarantees on anything that we're borrowing. we're confident in what we're doing. We know what we're doing is, you know, gonna do. Or, sorry, you might have to edit.
Well, I was gonna say we conservatively underwrite, so we're not projecting these like, hey, we're gonna get you like the so much money above and beyond what you've invested, which is why we're comfortable guaranteeing like a 10% return. And and like we're at a point now where it's like, even on some of the past deals, we've thought about using private money, and then we end up being able to work out these creative deals where we don't need it. But now, like you kind of mentioned, we are trying to grow, and we're at a point now where capital, you know, could potentially slow us down, or we can start taking on investors, give them a solid return, and continue to grow the portfolio. But again, like not getting out there and getting crazy. Like in the mobile home park space, infill is like a big way to increase your cash flow in each park and your value. But like, you know, we're looking at one of the parks right now has like 8 or 10 empty lots, but we're not underwriting to fill all 10 of those lots in like 2 years or 3 years or even 5 years. We're underwriting to fill maybe like one new home per year. And obviously we're going to try to do more than that, but we're not going to like bank on that, you know, in order to be able to pay people back. So that's kind of how we, and like, you know, back to the personal guarantee that Josh mentioned, it's like, that's how we're making people feel safe. It's like, you're getting all of the reward essentially, and none of the risk with this particular structure.
Yeah. I love it. Thank you for, and I think when you say like you're personally guaranteeing these loans, this means that you guys are on the hook if things were to go south on these deals. So you're so confident that you're putting your own personal credit, your own finances, you're probably significantly invested in these as well. So investors can feel very confident that you're going to be good stewards, because you're not only taking care of their money, but you're taking care of other investors and your own dollars that are invested in these units as well. So thank you for that.
Go ahead. Well, and then on the legal side of things, like we do have an attorney we use. So it's like we actually used some of Josh's parents' money to buy something a couple years ago, and then this other friend he mentioned, and those are a little more casual because, you know, the personal connection we had. But now as we're like expanding and trying to take on, you know, newer investors and maybe friends of friends and people who don't know us as well, we want to make sure, like, again, we're going through all the correct avenues, and we're using, you know, contracts from our lawyer and all that kind of stuff, so it is legally binding. It's not just like this handshake agreement that people are counting on.
Love it. Very cool. Well, good. Yeah. Well, it sounds like you guys are setting the foundation for a pretty exciting future. So what is the next 2 to 5 years look like for the business?
Well, I mean,
1,000 pads.
Yeah.
1,000 pads. That's been our goal for the last several years. Obviously we wanted it all to happen in 1 year, but everybody knows that's not going to happen. we're doing this. We've been building it out, you know, over the last couple of years, and now we're ready. Now that the foundation is super wide, we're ready to build straight up.
I love it. That's a lofty goal. but it sounds like you've done the work that'll actually put you guys in a position where you could, like, literally it is just a matter of throwing additional resources and capital at this and continuing to build across your expertise that you're building. And you see that hockey stick approach happen, or that hockey stick results happen quite often. So who knows? Yeah. You could go from 70 to 1,000 in a year or two.
Yeah. Well, I mean, currently we're set to close on, and we have another one we're under contract for that would double our portfolio. So that's a good step in the right direction. But as far as the next couple of years, this is like an ongoing, like, back and forth within our company, which includes Josh's sister. And it's like, we had these kind of lot count goals that we're going towards, but then we went and started a podcast, and, you always hear like the shiny object syndrome. We all, maybe just Josh and I, very much have shiny object syndrome.
Jennifer is the CEO of the company. She keeps us in line.
she holds it all together. Yeah. As like the podcast that we've started has like started taking some of the time, we're like always reevaluating the goals, but then we just can't stop looking for deals. Like we just did a trip, like 2 weeks ago, Josh and I drove like through Wisconsin, Iowa, Nebraska, back up through Minnesota into Wisconsin, looking at new parks and meeting with brokers and all that kind of stuff. So we love chasing the deals. So
I love it. We'll see. Well, very good. And I think the podcast is a great idea. One, it's going to put you in front of other operators. It's going to put you in front of your investors. And it's just a really great networking tool. I'm sure you guys will see the value out of it. Sometimes it's not as quick as we want, but in the long run, I think it'll be a great role for you guys. So, well, very good. Well, this has been exciting, guys. Thank you for walking us through all of these details. I feel like I've got a lot more questions, so we might have to schedule another one of these, but It's been a lot of fun getting to know you guys. I do have a few questions, though, I like to ask everybody at the end of the podcast, if you have a couple of minutes before we go here.
Yeah, sure do.
All right. Well, let's jump in. Joshua, I'm going to direct this one at you, and you guys can both answer, but let's definitely get your answer. So is there a specific educational resource that you have used in the mobile home investing arena that could help the newer passive investor learn more about mobile home investing?
Yeah, so I've always been a podcast junkie. I think I mentioned earlier where before we bought our first deal, I had 1,000, 2,000, I don't know how many thousands of hours of podcast education. There's sure. A lot of really good podcasts that are real estate, kind of generalized. But then there's actually several mobile home park podcasts as well that I listen to.
Got it.
I don't know where my phone is. Otherwise I'd name drop them, but there's two specifically that I listen to.
Okay. Yeah. Very good. Colin, anything specific that you'd want to share?
I think like more like later on now we've gone to, WealthCon, which is Ryan Pineda's event in Vegas a couple times.
Yeah.
And through that, and then actually through interviewing guests on our podcast, we've met a couple people working in the mobile home space and just networking with them and asking them questions about infill and like deal calculators and those kinds of things, and just kind of bouncing ideas off each other. That's been hugely helpful for us, like specifically within the mobile home park space. Just any podcast, YouTube, Instagram, like there's so much information out there now.
Yeah. Awesome. And I was going to say,
it's,
oh, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to mention that it's kind of great because like, as we've dove into real estate and mobile home parks, like you would imagine that a lot of these people that are giving us advice would be our direct competitors, but it doesn't really feel like that. Everybody wants to like grow together. Like you're very much willing to help somebody else grow while you're kind of growing alongside them.
I love that. I would agree. I find that in this space, the abundance mindset seems to flow through and through. And like I always share with folks, like I'm not in competition with anybody. There is so much opportunity out there. There's enough for everybody to have just their wildest dreams met. And there's probably even more to go around than what would satisfy that. So I love that you guys agree with that. And you're seeing the same thing. So, all right, well, now kind of a fun one here. And we're all associated with a group called GoBundance, and there's this theme around bucket list items. So is there a recent bucket list item that you guys have checked off your list or one you're hoping to in the near future? We'll go to you first, Colin.
Well, a couple of years ago, I did a trip through Europe that was pretty cool.
Nice.
I don't know that it was a bucket list item. Probably a bucket list item for me was like before the pandemic, I went to Santa Teresa, Costa Rica, and did a surf trip there. Did like mountains, and then we spent like a week just like surfing twice a day, and so that was pretty cool. I've always wanted to do a big surf trip like that. So That was awesome.
I've heard about Costa Rica surf before. That's awesome. Very cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Josh, so, anything you care to share?
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, as you know, as soon as you check off a bucket list item, you're supposed to fill it with something else. So, but the last bucket list item that I checked off was I went to Poland. So my wife is Polish. Most of her family is still in Poland. So last July, I was in Poland for a couple of weeks, and it was amazing.
Fantastic. And the one that you guys mentioned earlier, it's that 1,000th pad that you guys will be getting at some point in the near future, right?
That's it. Yeah. Yep.
Well, starting the podcast was kind of a bucket list item for us. It's something that's we've been talking about for a long time, and we launched in November of last year, and it's been cool just to get that going.
Very. And what's the name again, just for our listeners so they can go and check it out?
It's InvestingRN.
InvestingRN.
InvestingRN. Awesome. Because we're both registered nurses, but also it's a double entendre. Like right now.
Oh, nice.
No better time than to start than right now.
I love it. Yeah, I didn't get that the first time around, so thank you. All right, and then the final question I like to ask everybody is, if you had $100,000 that you had to invest in the next week to 10 days, but you couldn't invest in one of your own deals, where would you place that capital?
I would go probably black. Hunter on black.
There you go. 50-50 chance, right? Yeah.
No, I think I mean probably in some sort of like syndication or you know, fund or something like that. I know, you know, the Josh's cousin that we've referenced a couple times, he does capital raising. And I think one of the things that I think can be powerful when investing in other deals is like being able to see those deals and how they play out and how they're working things. Yeah. So especially since we're in the mobile home space, I think they're Green River Capital. So I'd probably throw $100,000 down with them.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. Very good.
That's something that I've done as well. I put some money into mobile home park syndication. So if you imagine yourself ever maybe venturing into more of the general partner side, put some money as a limited partner in some deals that you would want to get into at some point.
Yeah.
I think that's a great idea. Absolutely.
And kind of going back to like what we're doing, like that was like one of the things we discussed is like, okay, well, aside from the 10%, how else can we bring value? And especially for newer investors, like we've discussed, like, you know, bringing people in and just kind of letting them in on as much as they want to see of the deal as we're doing it. So if you can find something like that, if you're newer and you can find something like that where you can invest your money and it's truly passive and you can gain that knowledge, yep. Like it's, I don't think there's a better way to invest your money.
Well, and I can tell you from personal experience, I started investing as an LP investor for that exact reason, to peek behind the curtains to see if I wanted to become an operator myself. And I found out very, very quickly that I did not want to work as hard as you guys are working. On these syndications. And I made one too many mistakes where it was like, I need to put my money with the professionals and the experts that are going to be better stewards of my money than I can be, because I'm just not skilled in that space. So I think that's just a great, great lesson. So very good. Yeah. Well, guys, I appreciate the time today. We've talked about something we haven't talked about on the podcast today, or in the past. So thank you guys so much for coming on the show. How can our listeners find you guys to find out more about what you're doing or listen to the podcast or whatever else you guys would care to promote?
Yeah, so I guess most of what we do is on our podcast page, or our business page, I guess, on Instagram is probably the one that we're most active on. So that's at InvestingRNPod. So that's on Instagram. We're on all platforms, TikTok, Instagram, LinkedIn. But Instagram is the one that we're the most active on. So reach out to us on there. We have a website, investingrn.co. And then we have a YouTube page where we put all of our podcasts, long form podcasts.
Awesome.
And then any of that, like the InvestingRN stuff, will take you back to like, if anybody like wanted to invest or something like that, or just wanted to know about like how we're doing it, or even if you just have questions about mobile home parks, like I'm sure you can tell we get pretty excited talking about this stuff. So feel free to reach out. But yeah, you can get linked up to our All Day Investments, which is our real estate investing business through the podcast.
Fantastic. Well, Josh and Colin, thank you guys so much for being on the show. This has been a lot of fun.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah,
we appreciate it.
All right. And to the listeners, as always, we encourage you to continue that education journey. But more important than just the education, make the decision to invest in your first passive investment deal. We are convinced that once you do, you will wish you had started many, many years earlier. So again, thank you for joining us today. And be sure to join us again next Thursday for another great episode. Thank you.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, another episode of The Gentle Art of Crushing It. It was an amazing episode. We know we sure learned a lot, and we hope you did as well. We want to take a second to thank you so much for viewing or listening to this episode. And please just know that we only ask for one favor, and that is to make this life magnificent. Thank you, and have a wonderful day.